Senator Rubio, will you call for ceasefire?
No, I will not. On the contrary.
Senator Rubio,
are you filming it?
Well,
so
yes.
I want you guys to get this. I want them to destroy every element of Hamas they can get their hands on. These people are vicious animals who did horrifying crimes. And I hope you guys post that.
And what about the civilians that are being killed every day?
Hamas should stop hiding behind civilians, putting civilians in the way.
All right, so that's the voice of the future, Secretary of State for President Trump, Marco Rubio. I might have to revise my views of Marco Rubio. I used to absolutely love him. He really was one of the best. And maybe he can kind of reclaim some of his really strong positions on communism and on oppression. He certainly did do it in that interaction. He's walking down the hall in the Senate, and he gets sidelined. We're going to listen to another one of those later on in the show. But the Middle East continues to be a conundrum. And today we're going to talk to an expert not only on the Middle East, but also North Africa. She was the National Security Advisor for Senator Ted Cruz, and then later for President Donald Trump. She's one of the nation's leading experts. Her name is Victoria Coates, and she's just written a new book called Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. So that's what we're going to talk about today. It's really a great conversation, and I know you're going to enjoy it. But first, let me tell you a story. Deanna already had 8 children and was in a tumultuous marriage. The thought of another child was more than she could bear. She tried to order the abortion pill, but by God's design, it never came. At 18 weeks along, Deanna visited a preborn network clinic. While getting her sonogram, her baby waved at her. Then she remembered that this was the baby that she had asked God for. God saved her baby that day, and he also saved her. Well, of course, preborn is the key player in this. These moms have these incredible stories to tell, but when they walk into preborn, they're able to see, thanks to your generous donations, their baby inside their womb doing what babies do, sucking their thumbs, waving at their moms. And so when moms see their babies, so many of them, over half, maybe 60%, like Deanna, don't go through with an abortion. It is such a valuable ministry. That's why they're advertising our show, and that's why I'm so happy to help them raise money to make this possible. If you'd like to help Preborn provide an ultrasound for a mom like Deanna, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. All right, well, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. This is Christmas time, and I love Christmas. I really do. Sometime I'll tell you more. Well, maybe when Bruce joins me. When we're doing Christmas week, we'll talk about it. But Christmas has really changed for me since I met him. So I'll tell you that story. If you'd like to call us, call 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. Or write us at sandy@afr.net. sandy@afr.net. You can also find us on social media. Twitter is the one I use the most, or X, and my handle, as they call it, everyone's different, is @SandyRiosTweet. That's a place where you can really get news. That's what I use all the time, @SandyRiosTweet. But I'm on Telegram, YouTube for some things, and Facebook and Twitter. So also, if you want to listen to the podcast, some people are still not used to that. You can go to your favorite podcast platform, whichever it is, Spotify or Amazon. Some of you are getting used to it. But if you're not used to going to a podcast platform, AFR.net is home base. AFR.net, and you can find the podcast there. Or you can go to my website, which is sandyrios.com, and that's a really easy way to listen. Also, I would encourage you, especially at Christmas time here, to sign up for our mailing list at sandyrios.com. Because we'll send you some emails and just give you some other information that you wouldn't normally have. And we'd love to have you as our, you know, official listening family, sandyrios.com. All right, today we're going to be talking about the battle for the Jewish state, how Israel and America can win. What do the two have to do with each other? We'll talk about it with our guest, Victoria Coates. So stay tuned for today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness.
that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
A year ago, I said a simple thing. We will change the Middle East, and indeed, we are changing it. Syria is not the same Syria. Lebanon is not the same Lebanon. Gaza is not the same Gaza. And the head of the Axis, Iran, is not the same Iran. I discussed all of this again last night with my friend, U.S. President-elect Donald Trump. It was a very friendly, very warm, and very important conversation. We spoke about the need to complete Israel's victory, and we also spoke at length about the efforts we are making to free our hostages.
All right, that's the voice, of course, of Benjamin Netanyahu, sort of, with an interpreter, because President Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu just had a phone call in the last few days, last several hours. And we want to talk about that, but of course, there's so much going on in the Middle East. We spoke last week about what was happening in Syria, about Israel's, tiny little Israel's role in shaking up, really, the Middle East. And I can't think of anyone better to talk about this with knowledge and understanding than my next guest. Victoria Coates is a former national security advisor to President Trump. She's a former national security advisor to Ted Cruz. That was when I first came, actually met Victoria. She is now the vice president of the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation. She's written for Bloomberg, New York Post, Wall Street Journal. And she's a specialist on the Middle East and North Africa. And so she's written a brand new book called Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. And she joins us today. Victoria, thanks for joining us.
Sandy, great to be with you.
You know, I was just thinking back, my first knowledge of you and your work, I believe, was when Iran. The JCPOA, this big agreement that Obama had made with the Iranians and gave them, you know, pallets of cash and lifted sanctions and actually created a monster for all of us. And Senator Cruz was all over this with these rallies. I know you remember this, and I'm sure you were behind that. And I actually remember that Senator Cruz was the reason that Donald Trump became involved in this. I don't know if they were still candidates or if President Trump had become the candidate for president like 2015-ish. I'm sorry, I don't really remember the dates. But President Trump, Cruz invited him to come over to this big rally and share the stage with him. And I think that's what whetted his appetite for this fight. Do you want to say a word about that?
Well, yeah, I remember very clearly. That was on the Capitol Mall during the 2015-2016 primary, and they were both still candidates. And the decision was made to bring the two leading then Republican candidates together to express their strong opposition to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. No one's ever explained to me what that actually means, but the JCPOA, which had recently been reached, so it showed a kind of unity on the Republican side, which is pro-Israel and anti-Iranian regime, not anti-Iranian people, but Iranian regime. And Senator Cruz had been on the lead of that in the Senate, as you noted, really from the moment he got in 2013. I'm very honored he agreed to write the introduction to my new book, The Battle for the Jewish State, looking back at all that work, which we can talk about. But at the time, you know, I think it was a very important kind of signal to the world that whatever political differences they might have on the trail, Republicans were really united against that deal and for Israel.
I think it was remarkable. And just think of the implications of that, Victoria. President Trump ended up prevailing, but Ted was the one who was the bulldog on this. And that act of nobility, really, by asking President Trump, who had made pretty hard on him and the campaign trail, was amazing act of character. And then President Trump, I think, has, thank God, come to a census on Senator Cruz. And together, they have made a huge difference. Now, I'm really interested, you know, so much has happened. I mean, that's almost a cliche. The Middle East is just a bubbling turmoil cauldron of change. And so now we are here with Iran being beefed up during the Biden years, like making up for lost time for what President Trump had taken from them and sanctioned out of them, crippling them. Now the Biden administration has spent the last 4 years beefing them up again. So now we've had this collapse in Syria, which I'd like to talk to you about. But Iran is kind of has been a big backer for Syria. So I know some of this, but I'd love to know what you think about what condition Iran is in now after the fall of Bashar al-Assad.
Well, it's kind of a mixed bag. And, you know, it's kind of deja vu all over again. And this is part of what's in the book, is the history of what the Obama people did and then what the Biden people did. It is really the definition of insanity, repeating the same thing over and over, expecting a different outcome. But what we have now is Iran that has been weakened by the fall of Assad. He was one of their key henchmen, and they had been exploiting Syria as a conduit for arms and fighters to pass through from Iran over into Lebanon, where Hezbollah, one of their largest proxies, is located. So that and the Israeli actions against Hezbollah, which have been absolutely devastating, really has weakened them. They also have a bad domestic situation, Sandy. They've got a spiraling energy fuel crisis that nobody is talking about, but they are, they are unable to control. I mean, and this is so sick for a country that has some of the most massive energy resources on the planet. They can't control their domestic energy market, and prices are spiking. They don't have the money to subsidize them, because all the money that's come in over the last 4 years has gone to subsidizing terrorist proxies like Hamas and Hezbollah. So for all these reasons, they have bad problems. But important to remember that during those 4 years, they've also cultivated significant proxies, the Houthi in Yemen. They've increased their support for the popular mobilization front, the Shiite militias in Iraq. And they've also made huge progress on their nuclear program. When we left in 2021, they were enriching below 5%. They had centrifuges in the hundreds. They're now close to 80% enrichment with thousands upon thousands. They've just announced more centrifuges are going to be spinning. So for that reason, they remain very dangerous.
But all right, well, obviously they've been weakened because they didn't really do much when Bashar al-Assad was taken from power. It seemed as though, at least we were told, led to believe, that they didn't have the strength to defend or come in and get involved, and that all Israel's one-man mission to destroy these terrorist groups that they've developed has been so successful that they've been gutted and on their knees. But you're telling us that the nuclear program is 80% from 80%, what is it, saturation, whatever the word is frightening. I mean, okay, so there was some speculation that Israel might strike their nuclear facility. That didn't happen, or did it? Did it?
Well, it's not entirely clear. The Israeli strike on October 26th in retaliation for the Iranian direct strike on October 1st took out a lot of air defense for Iran, essentially leaving Iran naked, so basically telling them they can reach out and touch them anytime they want. But there was also a strike on the nuclear facility at Parchin. I don't think it was enough to really undermine the program. I think it was more kind of a knock at the door saying this is what's coming, and it's why I'm very glad that Prime Minister Netanyahu is in regular contact with President-elect Trump. I know other members of the administration have been talking to senior Israeli officials about where they think Iran is, because, you know, the most dangerous thing that could happen over the next 30 days is Iran tests a nuclear weapon, which could happen. So that's where Israel and the United States need to be in lockstep. Unfortunately, the current leadership of the United States is the party that let this happen, that stopped enforcing sanctions on Iran, that took no action against the robust acceleration of their nuclear activity on their watch. And I think they're just trying to kick the can down the road and hand this literally glowing problem to their successors, and then they'll just blame the next Trump administration for the problem they caused. But that's where the actual clear communication and cooperation with Israel is so critical for the national security interests of the United States.
So this is an aside, and it's become kind of a circus, but it's not funny. And that's all those drones. And I really don't want to focus on the drones in this conversation. But, you know, the congressman from New Jersey, his name escapes me, made the statement that these were ships from Iran off the coast of the United States, and these drones were coming from that ship, and now that's been poo-pooed. Do you know anything about that? Anything?
Well, I'm from Philadelphia, so we've actually been talking about this for a couple of weeks, you know, just locally. And I think this is emblematic of this, the approach of this administration, which is to obfuscate and not tell the American people the truth. We can tell this is different from the flight patterns we're all used to, the airplanes we're all used to. You know, they, now they're saying, oh, well, now drones can fly at night. That's what's different. I'm like, but why are they all up here? Why are they swarming over military installations? Why are they swarming over Bedminster? President-elect Trump just canceled a visit to Bedminster because of these things. And it just shows you, like the Chinese spy balloon, you know, they are not paying attention to these direct threats to the American homeland. So I do think these issues are really connected. And, you know, we are not getting a clear picture of this threat. And as Congressman Van Drew said, you know, there's a possibility that this is a hostile foreign power, that he had sources saying it was Iran. It could be Russia. It could be North Korea, or it could be China. So I think those are all really important questions to ask.
Well, you know, the really sad thing about it, sad, frightening, is the FBI says there's nothing to it. The Pentagon says there's nothing to it, or basically nothing here, nothing to see here. And you're not really seeing what you think you're seeing. It's like you said, it's a normal flight pattern, and these are manned aircraft. And we know that's not true. We don't know if they're manned or not, but we know it's not. As you said, the normal flight pattern. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people are seeing these. And FBI, Homeland Security, Pentagon, I'm not even sure what other agency, is denying there's anything to this. And we saw, okay, just I'm going to say the quiet part out loud. We've seen how they have, whatever part they played in President Trump's assassinations by, you know, incompetence, or whatever you want to call it, it really does make me worry. They don't seem to love this country very much, the people in charge right now. And it really makes me nervous, Victoria, that they would poo-poo this. It makes you wonder if something is in a foot. And how can we figure this out? Who can find out about this? Seriously, can President-elect Trump, has he got staff that can dig down deep and find out what the truth is?
Unfortunately, probably not yet. Right now, I think all we've got is Congress to demand explanations. But the other thing I'd remind your listeners is these folks have a history of bad intelligence failures. They have Afghanistan in 2021 when they, you know, predicted months of the government surviving and Kabul fell in days and that humiliating disaster of a surrender with our 13 heroes lost at Abbey Gate. Just a disaster. Then we had the invasion of Ukraine. They assured us a three-day war. We'll be arming an insurgency. That didn't turn out to be the case. Then the October 7th attacks on Israel, which is what inspired my book. They were declaring the region more peaceful than it had been in a generation. And most recently, the fall of Syria. They didn't see that coming. They were negotiating with Assad as recently as December 4th, trying to get a deal with him to renounce Iran, which was impossible on the face of it, but also completely idiotic, given the fact that his government was about to collapse within days. So they have a history of this, which makes me not trust them on this issue because, you know, who knows what they are assuming is happening? Do they think these are deployed in some kind of climate research that they're in favor of? That have they agreed to have them for that reason? And, you know, they don't realize that a hostile foreign government is exploiting their willingness to cooperate on climate to, you know, undermine the national security of Americans. I don't want that to be the case. I want that to be a crazy conspiracy theory. But after what they've done, I can't say for sure it isn't.
Well, the other part, one last thing, and we'll move on, I promise. The other part is we know that they hate the fact that President Trump has been reelected and he is the enemy to this deep, deep state, which is very dangerous and vicious. And that's what makes me worry, that it's some way to mess things up, to destroy before this inauguration. But it remains to be seen. I'm sorry to hear that that nobody can really get to the bottom of it. I just can't even imagine that. But you mentioned Bashar al-Assad in Syria, so let's talk about that. The last week we did talk about this on the show so that you know people have some sort of foundation here. But Bashar al-Assad had, you know, they've been decades of the House of Assad. They had ruled the place. And so-called rebel troops came in, and they, one has prevailed. I can't even pronounce its name. But they are Islamists, and they're aligned, are they not, with the Muslim Brotherhood faction of Islam? Is that right, Victoria?
Yeah, I mean, and you can call them by their initials, HTS, which is a little bit easier. It sort of becomes an alphabet soup of these groups. But yes, all of the HTS folk are alums of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. They have been card-carrying members of those terrorist groups. President Trump put HTS on the designated terrorist list in 2018 for excellent reasons, because of all the atrocities they had committed in Syria, as well as the Bashar al-Assad regime, as you rightly point out, has committed horrendous atrocities against the Syrian people, but that doesn't make the HTS folk innocent. And President Trump just said earlier today that he's taking their rule in Syria as, quote, a hostile takeover by Turkey. Turkey, which is very strongly in the Muslim Brotherhood camp under its current leadership, has been the one supporting and arming these folks. They realized, being neighbors to Syria, how weak the Assad regime had become, and that they could deploy these proxies to pretty easily topple it, and it worked. And so, you know, that's the situation we find ourselves in. No one's sad about Assad. But at the same time, there are deep concerns on the part of our regional partners, namely UAE and Israel, first and foremost, who think that this is potentially an enormous problem. And you see Israel's activity to kinetically destroy the remains of the Assad arsenal, including, excuse me, the chemical weapons, but all of the conventional weapons as well. They don't want those falling into the hands of these groups that are now running running Syria. And I think the burden has to be on HTS and their affiliates to demonstrate tolerance, inclusiveness, institutions of government that are reasonable and not extreme. They have to show that first before we agree to take them off any list or have any kind of relationship with them.
You know, Victoria, I've been on news reports that, at least on the networks, what I see is a constant theme of how wonderful this is and how joyful the people are to be rid of Assad. And, you know, these liberators, rebels have, you know, taken over the country and thrown out the terrible Bashar al-Assad, which, as you well said, there's no good player in this. They all have their hands dirty. But what I'm thinking about, what this reminds me of, is Barack Obama's move to create the Arab Spring, which really boiled down to establishing Muslim Brotherhood Islamists in all, at least that's my boiled down, simplified. This reminds me of that very much. It's like it's not accurate to say that it's kind of this great liberation, and now these are the liberators for the Syrian people, is it?
No, it's 100% not, any more than they were in Egypt during the Arab Spring, where the Obama administration sat by and saw a longtime ally of the United States, Hosni Mubarak, thrown out of office and a Muslim Brotherhood candidate, quote unquote, elected in the lowest turnout in Egyptian history to become president of the country. And we are still recovering from the horrible things that happened during the reign of President Mohamed Morsi, that when just weapons and extremists flowed into Egypt, it was a disaster. I remember John Kerry landing in a plane kind of in dead of night to hand over $1 billion of aid and having to take off immediately. Yes. Because it was so unsafe, even for a representative of the Obama administration. It's so short-sighted, and it's so egotistical that they think that a democracy is just going to break out across the Middle East. I think with a lot of hard work, you know, we can help, as I said, build institutions, build civic knowledge. But this is not native to the region. This is not what they're accustomed to. And it's not necessarily what they want right now. And so if you want to lay the foundations for that, sure. But if you race into democracy promotion, as we learned, I mean, from the George Bush administration, it can have terrible backlash. And I think that we've definitely seen that from what happened during the Obama administration and potentially now what the Biden folks have overseen in Syria.
Okay, well, that was just a part of our conversation with Victoria Coates. And we're going to come back and follow up with it. We're going to be talking about Israel's role in this. Why should we care about Israel? Why should they be our ally and more? So don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Some of you are, you know, you have more finances than others. We're not all the same. Some of you are struggling, but others of you still have good resources. And if you have those kinds of resources, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor Preborn's entire network for 24 hours, and that would reach 200 babies and their moms. To donate, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
For almost 4 years, we've been talking about the J6ers, people that went to Washington, to the Capitol on January 6th to support President Trump after the 2020 election. And for almost 4 years, dozens, really you could say hundreds, have been in jail or prison, most of them for petty, contrived sentences, like parading in the Capitol. Families have been devastated financially. Not a few of the J6ers have committed suicide. But many have gone deep with Christ to a renewed, powerful faith. Well, the J6 Christmas Drive, which is where I'm leading here, it's a way that you can help. And I think many of you would love to help. Let me just describe it. It's a way to take care of the families for kids without their dads, moms alone and struggling. I've featured so many of them on the show. I don't think I have to paint such a vivid picture. You know they have tremendous needs. If you would like to help them this Christmas, go to www.patriotmailproject.com/2024 Christmas Drive. I'll do that again. PatriotMailProject.com/2024 Christmas Drive and give what you can give.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
If you're looking for a Christmas gift, consider sending my new book, God's Velvet Hammer. It's available at Amazon.com. And you know, a fun way to enjoy it is to listen to the audio, which is available on Audible. I recorded it in Chicago with a longtime friend, Todd Bastide of Gap Digital. It was an emotional experience I did not expect since I had spent hours putting my story into words. But perhaps that emotion, the laughter and the sorrow, will bring my story to life for you, as it did for me. The book is called God's Velvet Hammer, available on Amazon and Audible. Merry Christmas to each and every one of you. Well, it seems to me that we have like two worldviews of what should be happening that you actually alluded to, the Bush view and the Obama view. And the Bush view was just as diluted as the Obama. Like the Bush Pentagon and his military people thought they could force democracy on the Middle East. And it was heartening to see, you know, Iraqis voting for the first time with their thumbs or their index finger, whichever it was, dipped in the ink. It was just amazing. But Islamic thought is just not compatible to me with the West and freedom and democracy. But so that is not going to work. And the second thing, I don't think really, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I don't really think Barack Obama was trying to establish democracy. I think maybe that verbiage was inherited from the Bush administration, but I think they're trying to create an Islamic caliphate. Now, that's an exaggerated statement, but they wanted the Muslim Brotherhood affiliates to prevail, and that doesn't mean democracy. So your thoughts about that, please.
Yeah, the one thing I would tweak there is it actually wasn't the Bush-era Pentagon that was bent on democracy promotion. As a Rumsfeld alum, I can share that, you know, he was always deeply dubious of the democracy promotion agenda. He thought we should get in there if the president's direction, which it was to topple Saddam Hussein and find any weapons of mass destruction, that we should do that and get the heck out of there. And that was also his recommendation for Afghanistan. So I think this was very much a State Department, a Condi Rice initiative that democracies don't attack each other. So to spread peace, we need to spread democracy. It sounded great at the time. That this is all in the battle for the Jewish state, because I know a lot of people wanted to be supportive of it, wanted it to go well, and it just didn't work out. We're now looking back at this 20 years later, and it seems insane. And so to try to do it again, you know, is, again, the height of madness. And I think President Trump is 100% correct. We need to stay out of this right now. We don't have a dog in this fight, and we can't manufacture one. And, you know, we've got the Russians sloshing around in there, the Iranians eyeing it, you know, the Israelis are there, you know, all of there's just there are too many, you know, cooks in this kitchen, and they all have their interests that they're pursuing. We don't have vital national security interests in Syria. And so our engagement, I think, would only be counterproductive.
All right, we're talking with Victoria Coates, who is the author of a brand new book, Battle for the Jewish State: How Israel and America Can Win. Victoria is with the Heritage Foundation, and she was formerly the National Security Advisor to President Trump, and a bunch of other things. But I just wanted to make sure you knew again about this book, Battle for the Jewish State. It's just coming out. All right, so I talked about this last week. I'm sorry to keep saying that, but Israel amazed me during the Syrian conflict, Victoria, because they played an outsized role for such a small little country. I just would like your thoughts about, I mean, is this because they have so thoroughly, you know, decimated these terrorist groups you described, and so they have freer reign as just a vacuum of power? What was that all about, you think?
Oh, I think it was really a decision on the part of Prime Minister Netanyahu and his war cabinet after his visit to Washington in late July of this year, when he met with then-candidate Harris, he met with then-candidate Trump. And whatever came out of those meetings created a really dramatic change in policy for Israel. And we saw the gloves come off. We saw them go after not only, you know, pursuing victory in Gaza, not some kind of negotiated ceasefire, but then also the very direct attacks on Hamas, the pager operation, the elimination of the leadership up to and including Hassan Nasrallah, who had been considered untouchable for lo these many years. So this is a, you know, just a change of Israeli policy. They want to be in this to win. And President Trump has talked about this as well. He wants the war over, but he wants it to end in an Israeli victory, because that is, you know, that is what has created this just intolerable cycle of violence against Israel, is the fact that no one has told, and now it's down to pretty much just the Palestinians and the Iranian proxies. Nobody's told them that they've lost. They lost 50 years ago, but, you know, they've been nursed along by the international community and told they're the equivalent of a nation state and given billions upon billions of dollars, all of which they have squandered. They have spent generations dedicated to terrorism, to genocide. They are at best a cause, and that cause is the elimination of Jews in Israel. And so, you know, I think that's where the clarity of President Trump, particularly after the Israeli actions of the last 4 months, will be very, very helpful, just in terms of clarifying what the situation on the ground is, which is Israel is a great and good ally of the United States. And as I said, the Palestinians are a cause, and a nasty one at that. So there's just no equivalency there, and we need to make that clear in order to get out of this horrible cycle.
You know, I had a discussion with a young man, younger than I am. He's got kids and he's a grown man. But he just can't understand why Israel is so important to America. I had that conversation with him, and I know that you address that in your book. Why should we be so concerned, first of all, about what happens with Israel? And secondly, why is it important that they be an ally to? Why are we such an ally to Israel? What I know those are two huge questions. So, just give us your best shot here.
Well, and that is precisely why I wrote the book. So the short answer is buy the book. You'll get all those answers. But the real focus of it is that the United States and Israel, uniquely around the globe, are examples of what the far left likes to call settler colonialism. And that was not a phrase I was actually familiar with, but now I have learned all about it, so y'all don't have to. But what it means is our countries were both settled by outsiders who came and appropriated lands from the indigenous folk who have the right to those lands. And so the enterprises, the United States and Israel, are both inherently imperial and inherently racist against indigenous peoples. Mm-hmm. And that makes them, in this logic, illegal. And so there is a whole host of academic literature, which is what's being fed to our children as we pay tens of thousands of dollars every year for them to go to these elite institutions of higher education, you know, that's being fed to them, that says these states are illegal and immoral and every action you take against them is legitimate. And that is why we've had the protests on the campus. That's what Senator Cruz wrote about in the introduction to the battle for the Jewish state, about the testimony of the three college presidents last December, in which they couldn't call the eradication of Jews genocide because they felt it was justified. And that is what is becoming a rot in the United States. And so that's why we have to realize that if they're coming for Israel, yes, they are Israel smaller, maybe easier to deal with, but that's not going to be the end of it. And if we don't, you know, stand up and fight back against it, it's coming here for us as well. So that is the key reason we should ally with Israel. But the other reason, and it has changed over the course of the last 76 years of Israel's existence, which is that Israel has become an extraordinarily, for its size, powerful and successful nation. And they have all sorts of high-tech innovation that is closely related to and complementary to what we have here in the United States. They're an extraordinary strategic security partner, an intelligence partner. But then they've invented everything from Waze to the cherry tomato. You know, their tech components are present in things we use every day, like an iPhone. And all of that is in the book as well. So there is a wonderful payback for our collaboration with them. It should be expanded. Just finally, one thing that caught my eye this week is the Biden administration quietly 3 days ago signed a science technology agreement with China to further scientific cooperation with China. And it's a massive deal, 5 years in duration, cooperation on everything from climate to, you know, energy to agriculture, bioscience, you name it. I mean, it's ridiculous. Why would we be doing that with China? We should be doing that with Israel. And, you know, that's really the message of the book.
Boy, that's an understatement. And I'm assuming that President Trump can reverse that. Can he not?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, what I would recommend on the STA with China is, you know, the three cabinet secretaries that have the most equities in it are energy, agriculture, and health and human services, that he has those three secretaries go through this monster with a fine-tooth comb. And if there is anything of value in it, that can be potentially preserved. But my guess is this is all just a ploy on the part of China. We've had these agreements since 79. So a lot of people have hoped that would be a means for cooperation with China. But it's a very different world, particularly after the pandemic. Nobody thinks they're in this to be, you know, for the good of humanity. They're in it to try to probe for weakness and gain an advantage. And so we need to cut that off. And then, as I said, partner with great good allies, first and foremost Israel, but we've got others, the United Kingdom, Japan, Australia, Canada, all of whom want to work with us on these things, all of whom are aligned with us. Why on earth would we do it with China?
Well, because Joe Biden's president right now, and he, or sort of, sort of. The wizard is behind the curtain, and the wizard is not a friend to America. But, okay, quick questions. I know you've answered this in part, but how do you think Trump is going to handle Israel, and then how about the Middle East? Just general comments. You know, there's a lot of, you know, he's very big on isolationism, really. I don't know if I should call it that, but foreign wars is a big deal, and I'd love to talk to you about that sometime. I'm concerned about commentators and other people maybe going over the board a little bit on this, because we have to be involved in some ways because of our strength, at least our hopefully regained strength. How do you think President Trump is going to handle Israel and their conflicts, and then also the Middle East and their broader conflicts? How's he going to make a distinction?
Yeah, I think he'll follow the principles of his first term, which were standing unequivocally with Israel. That's what Barack Obama had deliberately said he wasn't going to do, that there would be daylight between us. He said this publicly because standing unequivocally with Israel hadn't brought peace. So he thought he'd reverse that. So President Trump showed what it actually looked like when an American president moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, when an American president recognized Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights. There are other examples. And what that brought us to was a reversal of conventional wisdom, which, according to John Kerry, was that there had to be a deal with the Palestinians before there could be broader peace deals. Well, President Trump turned that on its head, and we got the first peace deals between Israel and Muslim-majority countries in 25 years with Bahrain and Morocco and UAE. So this is, you know, just a fundamental approach. That said, he'll be dealing with a very different Middle East now. 4 years of American neglect and mismanagement have created all sorts of bad problems. We've got a bad situation brewing in Yemen, a bad situation in Iraq that it's going to have to be dealt with at some point. And so we've got that problem. And then we have the very open collusion between China and its junior partners, Russia, Iran, and North Korea, which is, you know, brazen at this point. We have North Korean troops fighting in Yemen, Ukraine. We've got Israel finding brand new Russian weapons in the tunnel, Hezbollah tunnels in Lebanon. So they're all working together. And that is also different from what President Trump confronted before. So he's going to have to take a fresh look at that. As I said, a fresh look at where Iran actually is with its nuclear program. He is, of course, going to want to stay out of forever wars with no discernible U.S. national security interest. But when he does see an interest, he's demonstrated himself very willing to actually, you know, to take direct action. It's just not going to be his first default mechanism.
Victoria, last question. Are you optimistic he can do these things?
Can you say that again? Sorry.
Are you optimistic that President Trump can accomplish these things?
I am optimistic. He did it before. I think he can do it again. It's a big, scary, challenging world, but I think the world is also really hungry for American leadership. I think the way he was received in Paris, which you would think would be, have, you know, on the fainting couch, so concerned about the return of a Trump presidency, but he was received like a conquering hero. Even the continental Europeans understand that a strong America is good for the world, and that President Trump represents a strong America. So I am very, very optimistic that he can do these things.
Okay, great. Well, the book is called Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. The author is Victoria Coates, who's been our guest. Victoria, thank you for your time. We appreciate it. And you and I have to talk again. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
Hamas should surrender.
You cannot, sir.
Hamas,
it's
not justified.
You're taping this, right?
Correct. Hamas should surrender so that the people there could stop suffering because of them. It's all Hamas.
Sir, this is not true.
It
does not.
If Hamas lays down their weapons, the fighting
stops. That does not justify 32,000 dead, a starvation, a famine.
That's a lie.
It's not, sir, no, you are lying right now. You are lying. You're supporting genocide.
Wow. That's in the halls of our Congress. And our friends are strolling the halls right now. Stopping senators, and they're allowed to do that. Bruce, my sweetheart, thanks for joining me. Yeah, you found those clips pretty entertaining, wasn't it?
I'll tell you, I am encouraged that I see that kind of a response from our future Secretary of State, Marco Rubio. It's refreshing, because normally from our politicians, we get a parsing and, cut the baby in half and try to please everyone. I don't think there was any equivocation by Marco Rubio in those statements.
No, don't think so either.
You know, I think it illustrates the stark contrast that we are seeing between what we've witnessed the last 4 years with the Biden administration and what we have to look forward to in the next 4 years of the Trump administration. The United States is going to stand with Israel. They're going to back Israel in their seeking of a victory in the Middle East, not a ceasefire. How many times do we have to see a ceasefire not work? It's just a Band-Aid that eventually gets ripped off. We have to support Israel. As Victoria said, we are kindred spirits, the United States and Israel. And it makes no sense for us to not fully throw in with them.
I think you're right, Bruce. And we're going to have to do a re-education of our younger people, because they think that, not that this isn't enough for those of us that are believers, that America supports Israel just because we fancy ourselves a Christian nation, and this Bible is really clear on the support of Israel. And for Christians, that's a given. But for unchurched people, or people who are non-Christians or nominal, they don't have that knowledge, and they can't understand why our Congress is so supportive of Israel. And I think Victoria explained that. If you can't understand the religious implications of this, then you can understand that she is a strong ally, that she is an innovator, that she's knocking it out of the park with inventions and innovation, and just like a one-woman wrecking ball in the Middle East to destroy our enemies. And those enemies of Israel are our enemies by their own mouth. They hate us and want to destroy us. How often is Iran chanting in their Congress, you know, death to America, death to America? These are the people that the Biden administration wants to buddy up with. And so they are our allies, our natural allies. They are strong. And maybe they're not perfect. But, you know, maybe we're not perfect either. But we have a lot in common, and that's the reason we need to support them.
Well, I thought it was really interesting when Victoria talked about that term settler colonialism. I've never heard that explained before, how the left supposedly hates Israel and the United States because they were nations that were founded and settled by outsiders, and that
we have
oppressed as the people that came in from the outside, we have oppressed the indigenous people, and therefore everything we do is wrong. And everything we do should be fought back against.
What nation does that sound like that we're more familiar with, Bruce? A country we travel to often, just on our northern border. Indigenous people. Yeah, so Canada is just, that's the world view. That's the reason we hear that from them, because they've been overtaken by leftist view of the world. And so I never heard that phrase either, settler colonialism. Just another reason to hate your country. Just another reason, in case you needed one.
Well, you know, it always surprises us. I guess it's an age thing that, you know, we have such an affinity for Israel, and we understand the importance of them. And you know, we've been alive for most of their existence, and we've seen what's been done to the Jewish people, to the Israeli people. And then to have our children told that all that is a lie, and that the Israelis are wicked, and that they are the oppressors of the Middle
East. And that we're wicked.
Yeah, and that they're the oppressors of the Middle East. It's hard to register with us.
Yeah.
But this explanation by Victoria really helps me understand one of the reasons we have to continue to educate people about the true existence of Israel.
Right, right. Thank you, honey. That's really good. All right, well, we really do appreciate you listening today. And I just think, you know, remember the book is called Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. And I think you're going to enjoy it. I will have Victoria on again, because she is, it's just great to connect with her. All right, so I want to thank you. I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan, because they let you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-10-PLANET. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.